Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark the Liberty, and joining me today is...
International travel weary Corey Knockreiner. I guess we could say the same about you, Mark.
You and me both. It has been a couple weeks of very long travel, but...
Amazing how we got so many podcasts done while we're all over the place.
Almost like we pre-recorded one or two of them.
We'd never do that.
This week, we are finishing up Cybersecurity Awareness Month, the month of October, with another episode focusing on
specific... What are we doing for November?
I want
a cyber's mustache.
I will try and grow facial hair for the first time in my life.
Try being the keyword, guys. He has like 5 weeks of growth right now. This is like my 5 o'clock shadow.
Let's talk about cybers. This week, focusing on manufacturing and managed service providers to... Not really related at all industries, but still very important topics to cover. Time to jump in, jerk. So welcome back to, what is this, week four of our Cybersecurity Awareness Month?
Go October.
And we've got another fun episode highlighting, this case, two different verticals again.
Fun. Verticals are always fun.
Much better than horizontals. Why do they call them verticals? I'm not a business guy.
I don't know.
It's all I've ever... Industries.
Probably because the industry shows up on the vertical.
There we go.
Growth okay. On the horizontal. I don't
Corey
know.
Corey is a business guy. He understands. So this
play
episode,
one on TV.
We're splitting it up with discussing manufacturing and MSPs, which, despite being in the same episode, are not related at all whatsoever.
Nope. Well, they both have M's in the name.
They both have M's. And
alphabetically
they both,
close to one another.
They both have cybers as well, so we'll have to discuss the cybers.
Much cybers.
So let's start with manufacturing. In some of our previous episodes this month, we've kind of started with regulations and... compliance.
Well, that's perfect for
industries.
A podcast because you certainly don't need anything like words when it's an audio only medium.
It's been a week. Don't really have any regulations and compliance to chat about with manufacturing, but we do have a few main threat categories that really impact manufacturing significantly more than really any other industry. And the real big one I think we got to knock out first is just the whole world revolving around industrial IoT.
OT.
IIoT.
Oh, industrial IoT? OT or operational technology might fit too.
Oh, look at that. There's so many acronyms we can do. OT is two fewer characters, so let's go with that. So with manufacturing for quite some time, like a lot of these networks have been... I don't want to say basic, but at least computationally specific to whatever the industry is. And they've all been kind of like air-gapped or at least not really connected to networks until recently.
Well, they've been claimed to be air-gapped
right. Anyways.
I guess some are better than others.
But as of late, there's been a really big advancement in pushing industrial IoT, OT, whatever you want to call it, into more network connectivity because it really does provide a bit of a benefit. Being able to get more data out of it and monitor and manage these devices quite a bit easier than they were previously. But, of course, that comes with security risks as well.
Certainly.
And we saw, I think, the best example of a threat targeting industrial IoT came about a decade ago now with an attack that really started with...
To me, Pandora's box for state-sponsored attacks.
Exactly. We've talked about it a few times on this podcast, but Stuxnet is an example that we've used for quite a few different things, both attacks against IoT, industrial control systems, advanced malware attacks, because it was pretty hardcore when it first came out.
Amazingly advanced.
If you've missed our discussions on Stuxnet or you haven't dived down
the
Wikipedia
rabbit
hole.
Media's discussions, there's documentaries and Netflix. I mean, you've heard about Stuxnet a lot, I'm sure.
Yep. Attack first discovered in around 2010, though there's claims that it was in development for at least 5 years before then, too.
Yep.
It's specifically
Project
targeted.
Olympics, if I remember right, was the name of the U.S. project associated with Stuxnet.
Yep.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. targeted the programmable logic controllers, or PLCs, for Iran's nuclear centrifuges.
Well, back up a little. I mean, it was super sophisticated, had 4-0 day, and it initially targeted Windows software. Yep. Because of the air gap, they're actually looking for a engineer's PLC programming computer. So Simmons Software, I think, something seven.
Step seven
was one. I think there's one other utility too it looked for, but essentially these are the utilities that the manufacturing or the centrifuge engineers would use to upload new firmware to the PLCs or the programmable logic controllers on centrifuges.
So really it was designed to infect any Windows system it could find and then look for that specific software.
It only really activated a payload if it found that.
Yeah, but it still managed to infect the numbers that I last saw were over 200,000 computers.
Frankly, we only know about it because of bugs. It was sophisticated in that it had kill code. It was supposed to kill itself if it lasted too long on a system and didn't find that software. So it would be very infectious, but it only was really trying to find specific computers, and it wanted to kill itself because obviously they want to hide. If you're on more systems, you have more chance of AV catching you.
And you mentioned it used 4-0 days, which 0 days are worth a ton of money these days and even back then. And so the fact that it used
Back in Pop Corey's day.
Back in 10 years ago. I think that's still, that is Pop Corey's day, even though that was at least when I was in the.
You were in the support.
Something like that.
Join calls, although I think we might have invited you to Radio Free Security a few times. Well, maybe still, not in 2010.
Back in the Pop Corey's days. 4-0 days was still a pretty big deal.
God, it was a lot. And I think the shortcut link one was one of the biggest. That was one that weaponized USB drives. You probably know USB drives sometimes have plug and play, so Windows just weaponizes them for you. But by then, lots of people were disabling plug and play. So it was a vulnerability in the way Windows processes shortcut links. When you plug in a USB drive, just parsing the file system, it looked at shortcut links and parsed them in a certain way that it could use that to execute code just by plugging in a USB key.
And that's really how they hopped the air gap, too. Like, their whole point was. Because these systems were air-gapped, they needed to get it in some way.
Allegedly, there's an insider that the CIA had groomed that walked it in.
Man, hardcore stuff.
Yeah. And by the way, the PLC, I mean, sometimes you've heard me and Mark talk about IoT. And I've mentioned in the past, a big majority of consumer IoT is a Linux system. So not proprietary, pretty well recognized, easy to write malware for or bad scripts for. This was proprietary. I mean, the PLC rootkit was a first of its kind. You know, after infecting the Windows computer, you know, when the engineer took that computer to a centrifuge and plugged it in, presumably with a serial line, it literally infected the very customized proprietary, you know, firmware of these centrifuges. And it installed a PLC rootkit. So not only did it adjust what the centrifuge was doing, the rootkit allowed it to lie back to the management software. So you didn't realize your centrifuge was spinning out of control when it was. So uber sophisticated. I highly recommend Symantec's like 50-page PDF on it. When that leaked, a lot of criminal malware started using some of the zero-day that was present in Stuxnet.
So that's obviously a bit of an extreme example, but still a good example of attacks targeting industrial IoT. But there's even more recent ones. Like even just this last year, we saw a pretty, I don't know what to say basic, but I mean, ransomware has been targeting individual organizations for quite some time, but it's really started targeting IoT, or not IoT, manufacturing specifically now too. It was March this year when Norsk Hydro, the largest aluminum manufacturer in the entire world, got hit with Locker Goga. Every time I see that, I want to think it's Lady Gaga ransomware, but Locker Goga's probably fine.
Love that ransomware is getting anime names now.
It's fantastic. But it was such a devastating attack. They had to go into basically manual control mode for whatever plants they could keep up to at least get some manufacturing continuing.
Yep.
I think the last I saw was like 50 million plus in damages just from replacement, lost downtime from revenue, things like that.
while we're talking this, a year, almost a year, probably more like 11 months after WannaCry came out, Boeing got it literally in their South Carolina manufacturing facilities. We don't know a ton about it because the only reason the industry knows is a leaked memo from IT admin that warned that it was virulently spreading among their other locations because of its worm capabilities. But you know, if you can, the computers that run SCADA, supervisory control and data acquisition, that's kind of like the monitoring human input side of manufacturing, where you have robots running stuff, but there's these probably Windows and traditional computing systems that they connect to that you monitor with. You can imagine if ransomware gets on that, even if it's not on the manufacturing floor, it will hold up manufacturing for sure.
Exactly. So what can those in the manufacturing industry do to like keep their systems and networks safe then?
Unplug the internet.
I mean, you joke, but that is a good first step. Is air gapping wherever possible can make it a lot harder for your systems to get infected.
Or as our notes say, air gab. I like air gab better. But just kidding. Air gap is important.
They do say that.
Yeah. I do think manufacturing and utilities is a different vertical, but these verticals do get benefit from online connection. Like it's not manufacturing, but they share a lot of the OT type technologies. The smart grid gets benefit from that full mesh network. So we do understand that connecting some systems is useful. Like I don't know if you have robots building things, it's probably easier to have a network connection to your CAD, you know, file system so you can load new models quickly without walking across the air gap. That said, if you can afford it and for certain industries and certain manufacturing plants, it's better just to have that system totally segmented from the back office and any sort of internet connection.
But if you do need to connect it to a network, like you said, really, as we recommend just about every time, heavily, heavily restrict the traffic to exactly what's required for it to work.
Segment.
Yep.
And then the beauty of a manufacturing network is in an office environment, segmenting networks is possible, but it's harder because there's general traffic passing between them. So you might have to open up a lot of policies and you might have to spend time figuring out what you need to open. But presumably on a manufacturing network, like a car network, a different thing, but these are single purpose networks. You know exactly what protocols and exactly what software is running on your manufacturing network, and that's the only thing you need to allow. So presumably not only can you can segment hard and almost take a whitelist approach of just approving what's absolutely necessary and stopping everything else.
That also makes it easier to monitor it too, because if you know exactly what to expect and you start seeing weird traffic on some other random port or more data than you're used to, it could be a red flag that something's going on.
This is an anecdotal digression, but it's related. I mean, the reason I brought up cars CAN networks is it's like in IPS and in the business environment, it's hard to take this whitelist model. You really have to assume any software can run. But on a car network, you always know exactly what different computers are saying to the other computers. And it just makes it trivial to create an IPS system for that really specific network. So you could very easily do the same in manufacturing.
Maybe Boeing should have taken notes on that with their whole hacking airplanes thing.
Oh yeah, the 747.
Also, obviously, phishing training is pretty important when it comes to manufacturing, because if you do air gap or segment your networks, one of the easiest ways to get across that protection is just convincing a human employee to make the mistake and bring a thumb drive over.
Which, by the way, means you should probably look to have some more security for passing that air gap. Either there's going to be a programming laptop or USB keys. Have some rules and procedures for how you allow data, because data will eventually have to pass the air gap, if not just to upgrade firmware on a device. Make sure to have some rules, harder than normal back office rules for those engineering computers or keys or whatnot.
Yep. And then also when you're, I don't know how much choice a lot of manufacturers have, but look for tools and products and whatever you're installing that have some sort of firmware integrity
too. Secure boot.
Secure Boot.
I'd love to talk about IoT device security, but I have a feeling some of these manufacturing floor things are running like versions of embedded Windows CE or Windows NT and Windows 2000. I have a feeling there's some old systems out there on some manufacturing floors.
Really? You think there's poor security in the IoT
space?
Who
would imagine? I'm sure this is a unique thought no one has ever thought before.
We've never seen evidence of that anywhere at all whatsoever. Man, how dare you, Corey?
But you're right. I mean, if you're updating your manufacturing equipment to the latest, Secure Boot is something every IoT device should use.
Yep, especially in a manufacturing. Like, I don't expect my crappy little camera off Amazon to care
more,
about Secure
more
Boot,
specifically, but you're not willing to pay for what it take to get your...
Exactly. I mean, maybe I am. No one else in the world is. So let's move on to our second section in this episode, and that's MSPs, which, I mean, at WatchGuard, MSPs are basically our lifeblood. So we want to make sure we spend a lot of time making sure that they can keep secure and give good tips here. So let's jump right in.
For those that don't know or haven't heard us talk about this subject, managed service providers, or their brethren MSSPs with an extra S, which just adds a security service provider.
Wonder what the next acronym is going to be.
Yeah, as if you don't hear enough acronyms from me and Mark on a daily basis.
We should have like an acronym glossary or something.
Oh God, I think we do at WatchGuard.com, although I think we're kind of behind in some terms, so don't hold us to it. Most of you probably know what this is. You might have heard of us talk about it, but these are essentially service providers for either all your IT needs or your IT and security needs. A lot of small businesses out there don't even have the resource to have one IT guy, let alone a bunch of IT guys and a security professional. So they have to outsource a lot of their IT servicing to other companies. They provide a great service. I mean, if you're small and want to focus on your business, but you want to use modern IT, it's probably more cost effective to just use the MSP. And if you get the extra S there, I mean, both of them tend to try to provide security with their infrastructure, but the extra S even focuses on security, which is nice for the size companies that don't have security professionals.
But when it comes to being an MSP, you have a really big target on your back because oftentimes you have elevated access to all of your customers' networks.
Pretty much all the time. I mean, you are the IT admin for that network, so pretty much you are it.
So if you get hit with an attack, it could very easily spread to all of your customers too. So what are some threats we got to watch out for there? Obviously, a real big one and one that we've seen some big recent examples for is phishing and credential theft.
Yeah, I got to say all of them, but we've definitely seen attacks that have started with credential theft in a bunch of different ways, but phishing is one of the most common ways to get credentials for sure.
And it's because MSPs use tools to manage software, to manage application deployment, even to manage secure endpoint security on all the systems they put out there for their customers. And so if you have the keys to the kingdom there, you can disable a lot of that or even use it to distribute malware.
And these tools are really kind of multi-tier, multi-tenant, central managed. It's not just to manage one customer at a time. These tools are their easy button to be able to manage tens, if not hundreds of customers at a time.
Yep.
So you get the admin credential to that. You haven't broken into just one business, the MSP, but you've broken into potentially every customer they have.
And we actually had I don't think we had a quarter two Internet Security Report podcast for our last report that came out.
Oh, not yet. I don't think we've had it yet, no.
So we haven't talked about it yet, but we actually had a section that Corey wrote. Thank you for your contribution, Corey, to the...
Shut up, I started the report.
to the last security report, where you actually went into a pretty in-depth analysis of an attack against some MSPs that used credential theft, which allowed them to basically abuse Webroot's management console to disable security defenses and then use other tools to spread ransomware to networks.
Yeah, we based on, just our partnership with thousands of MSPs around the world, we were in contact with one who have had the attack affect them. So we got samples for ransomware code samples of the PowerShell they used that they actually launched via the Webroot Central Management Console. So we're able to look a little deeper at that and talk about how it happened. The one big thing, there was an attack previous to the one we talked about earlier this year that was due to a known vulnerability. in ConnectWise's Kaseya VSA plugin. Kaseya VSA and ConnectWise, for that matter, are like remote management and monitoring tools or professional service automation tools. So in previous attacks, they used a known vulnerability that basically gave them full access to the tool used to deploy a lot of changes to different equipment. This time, there wasn't any sort of single hair that broke the camel's back. Rather, it was very much credential theft. The one thing we know is they had MSP's credentials. Don't know exactly how. One commonality, though, is RDP services, RDP Remote Desktop Protocol, of course, like everyone else, MSPs might use it to remotely manage customers, and so they might be more exposed online than the average protocol. But some suggest it might have been a RDP-related hack or maybe RDP brute forcing that could have helped get some of the credentials in some case, or at least to test them. But we don't really know for sure. It could just have easily as been phishing.
Yeah, so obviously protecting your credentials is one big thing. Another big threat that we kind of talked about in manufacturing too is really ransomware. So we mentioned quite a few times recently that ransomware as a whole is starting to plateau. Like we're seeing at least not more of the
big what's kind of plateaued is the ubiquitous attack to everyone on the internet. Yep. I mean, when CryptoLocker and CryptoWall first came out, you know, it was so effective that they would send it to everyone, including your grandma, to big corporations, because they could get about $300 to $500 from anyone. Just because if I lock up all your family pictures, even grandma's willing to pay $300.
They started making like $1 billion a year in ransom payments.
Exactly. So that it was ubiquitous for a long time. I'd say 2016, 2017 was the highest peak for that. What's changed, as you propose, Mark, the volume's probably gone down, but it really has, while volume has gone down to everybody, it is more targeted. Ransomware has not disappeared. And these targeted attacks come with much bigger ransom demands.
We've seen, tens of thousands of dollars now for even just individual companies, because they know they're going after companies where the ransomware is highly effective because downtime affects them more than anyone else. Corey, mute your laptop. And and they either have insurance or the means to pay the ransom to regain access to their files.
Yep.
And MSPs are specifically susceptible to this, A, because if they get locked out, it's not just them that are down, it's all their customers.
Literally, they're there to support their customers' IT needs, and they're going to have all their customers calling them up with ransomware infections.
Exactly.
So, pretty big deal.
So, in terms of tips, how do we keep them safe? Well, when it comes to credential theft, phishing training is obviously really important. I actually just did a webinar with our CISO, Wason, where we talked about like our own
CIO
Wason, where we talked about our own like phishing awareness that we do internally, and how it really helps out. So he advocates for security training during onboarding is important, just right out the door, and then quarterly phishing training, ad hoc phishing training. Like we built a campaign when the whole Equifax settlement started making the news rounds. We built a campaign around the Equifax settlement to try and phish our own employees.
Nasty and smart.
And it actually, I hate to admit it, but our click rates have been really good, but those ad hoc ones tend to get more bite than just the generic phishing emails we send out too, which also provides an avenue for more training for our employees also. So it's something that I advocate for as well.
Me too. I can't disagree more with IT guys that just don't believe in training. There's a lot of guys that say, it's not perfect, people will still click, so if training's not perfect, what's the point? I think that's an organization that's never had to handle security incidents. You know, you are right, you can train left and right, and there still will be someone that occasionally clicks a well-crafted thing, but the point isn't about perfection, it's about dropping the numbers. The less people that click, the less incidents you'll have to follow up on.
Exactly,
so
and it gives
it
your
does work.
Technical controls a much better chance, too, where
Absolutely.
You're not just getting bombarded with malicious links and attachments and whatever.
Yeah, I mean, we can defang links that we know of, but even with great threat intelligence, there's always one new one. So it's better to get training to catch some, but give your technical controls a chance to kick into.
And I'd also say if you are a MSP or MSSP, look at providing phishing training as a service to your customers too. Like I've met a lot of ours that do it in-house and a lot also that partner with products. People like KnowBe4 or what is it, Kofense?
Kofense.
Yes. You can partner with them too. And they
I think Trump
provide...
tweeted about that one.
Exactly. Phishing training.
It's Rudy Giuliani's security companies.
He did say that certain people in his administration would understand what he meant with Kofense. So clearly it was a call out to Kofense's phishing training. Another good tip is multi-factor authentication.
To me, the biggest tip for this, really.
It neuters or at least makes it a lot more difficult to exploit stolen credentials because you have to basically steal someone's phone then too.
Or other factor, whatever they're using.
Yep. So great at defending against multi-factor credential theft. One thing I noticed is I was not aware that all those NIST password updates they just released earlier this year, one of the things they did was actually, they call it restricting. So something they're going to remove recommendations for in the future is SMS-based multi-factor.
I thought they had already removed that in NIST.
It is. It's not, or whatever they call it now. It's restricted in that, A, you have to have a migration plan off of it, and B, you have to provide alternatives too. But
since we just jumped into this, if you don't recognize all the acronyms we're talking about, one form of multi-factor using phones is sending a text message with a, here's another acronym, a OTP or one-time password, which is that six-digit typically code you enter. And the reason NIST and other organizations are kind of depreciating SMS-based multi-factor, you've probably heard us if you listen say this before, but it's because, you know, text messages are clear text and there's been many avenues identified where you can intercept that, whether it be malware on the device, leveraging attacks against carrier protocols like SS7 to man in the middle text messages
or
and so on.
Or just social engineering an AT&T employee to steal the phone number right
exactly.
on another SIM card.
Even SIM jacking, yeah.
You can just ask Reddit how great their
how did that SMS multi-factor work out for you guys, Reddit?
If you're not using SMS.
We joke. Yes. If you have no option but single factor or SMS-based, use SMS-based, hands down.
But if you do have an option, and there are many other options, like you mentioned unencrypted SMS, you can use encrypted channels through like an app-based multi-factor solution too.
Notifications over TLS. Heard there's this great product called Authpoint made by some company that provides enterprise-class multi-factor to all segments of the industry.
Wonder what company that is. They probably hire a bunch of weirdos to have a podcast.
Sounds about right.
So hopefully those are good tips. Obviously, technical defenses too, like with ransomware, just good layers of anti-malware can help you out there. Most malware these days is pretty evasive. I actually just checked our threat landscape, and for like the month of September, it was 53% of all malware was what we classify as zero-day malware, so bypassing signature-based antivirus, which is insane. One of our
I've seen some regions go up to like 82% or something, but only in a specific region.
One of our sales engineers that I met up with just last week mentioned that if you filter just for the states, it was like 78% for the month of September.
Wow.
So it's really starting to shoot up there, which really highlights the need for better anti-malware detection. So things that look at behaviors, things that use machine learning and AI to
anything that's proactive and is not waiting for some human to write a pattern.
Exactly. And so that training, multi-factor, and you're safe. You'll never get hacked.
Yeah. That's all you need.
Just secure it.
By the way, sarcasm if you don't detect it. But you'll be much better off than some of the organizations that have gotten hacked. And by the way, this is not stopping. The thing we wrote about in Q2, there's another incident in Q3 that affected a lot of local and state government-related organizations at once, also a service provider incident. So if you are an MSP, know that this target's not theoretical. In the United States, at least, you are being actively targeted. They understand the tools you use, the techniques you use to manage your customers, and it's really up to you to increase your security to protect yourself from this.
The attacks will continue until morale approves.
Yeah. I haven't seen anything global except for one report of a Saudi Arabian MSP yet, but so far this seems to be US-centric. That will definitely change.
Yep. So, on that happy news, this was our last episode for Cybersecurity Awareness Month.
Yeah, you don't have to listen to our tips anymore. Happy news!
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you have any questions on today's topics or suggestions for things we should chat about on future episodes, reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at @XORRO_, Corey's at @SecAdept, and the both of us are at #the443podcast.
I like living in a hashtag.
You're living in a hashtag?
I said I like living in a hashtag, yeah.
Hashtag
life.
Hashtag
life. Hashtag more hashtags, God. Please.
Hashtag
interrupt mark.
Hashtag see you next week.